Radio for Believers in Action. Warm-hearted good morning if you've just joined us. Well, you're just in time for a very, very interesting discussion, and I invite that. A well-known individual certainly needs no introduction to help me work through this, mull it over, talk about it. The well-known Dr. Gustav Gous. Gustav, good morning to you and welcome. How are you keeping on this Monday morning?
Wijnand, absolutely great, but very relevant topic on plagiarism.
Yeah, plagiarism and ghostwriting. I came across a website that sells these services that says, contact me. This is now for learners, anything as young as you can find them to basically grade 12, as well as university students that offer their services and says, well, if you've got anything to write, orators, any task, anything, we'll assist you with it. And they basically sell their services. Gustav, what on earth is plagiarism? When does plagiarism and ghostwriting come into play? This is for real. This is happening as we speak.
Yes, Wijnand, in my field, previously in my earlier days, the academic field, it was very relevant because what do you do with a student that doesn't do original work? If they want either marks in a pre-grad degree, their specific work, is it their own or is it done by somebody else, or in a master's degree? There are even people whose PhDs were taken away from them when they found that their research was not theirs, but they actually piggybacked on another person's back. So that is in the academic world. In the speaker's world, there is also the whole thing that people steal each other's intellectual property. Because all about this in the professional world is about intellectual property. But I always have a definition. I had a definition for my students. What is plagiarism? I always said if you take all your information from one source, it is plagiarism. If you use five sources, then it is research.
All right, so that's the difference. Five sources, that's research and plagiarism. And how would you describe ghostwriting then? What on earth is ghostwriting?
Now, one of the famous authors who makes use of it is a person called John Maxwell. Now, ghostwriting, there's always a fine line in all of this. So that if you have a specific ideas, it's all about intellectual property. So if you give yourself out there, you say, listen, I wrote this song or I wrote this book, then it must be your original ideas. But then some people say, and they sit with a professional writer and say, listen, this is what I want to say, and put this into nice words for me. So they share the ideas and somebody actually gives form to it, which is a very fine line, because I'm actually a little bit uncomfortable with that, because I like to present my own thoughts and I want it to be my definition. But I also have submitted books to publishers, and then there's a good editor or good journalist sitting there and making it sound better. That for instance, my English is not that good, then they get a writer to put it in better English for that sake. So ghostwriting is an existing thing which is not frowned upon so much, but there's a fine line. Where does the intellectual property of the originator stops, and where does the person put intellectual property in, the person who does the ghostwriting? So, and I think it's all about the fine line is about your intellectual property, the packaging. You can hire somebody to help you with that, but the original ideas must originate from you, because you sell it and you claim to the world that it's your ideas.
Gustav, let's take it back to school level, to learner level. Saw this Facebook page that promote their business. Somebody said, you know, at the end of the day, it's about the bottom dollar. They're selling their service for money, and they say, listen, we're willing to write your orators for you. We're willing to do your school tasks for you, your homework. And it comes at a price. There's 26,000 people on that website. There's Christians there that says amen to this and amen to that. Where do we draw the line? What are we teaching our children if this becomes acceptable?
You know, there is the letter of the law. There is the letter of the law, and there's the spirit of the law. The spirit of the law is, why do you go to school? You want to teach your children something, and they must learn something. So anything that is helping the learning curve of the student, that is okay. So for instance, if there's a school project. Now, fortunately, you catch me at a stage in my life. I'm married quite late in life, so I've got children still at school. So this week I was confronted with a task by one of my children on a field which I was very much comfortable in, and then another field that I'm not comfortable at all in, namely electronics. The one task was about Bayer's Nordea, and which I actually wrote part of my dissertation about, so I could help my child with that. But what I liked about the schooling system there is, what they did is they, instead of you writing this fantastic thing and then suddenly the teacher says, wow, what a task, and not knowing that his parent was sort of a specialist in that field. Now what they did is they can, at home, the teachers changed their system. They said you can get the raw material at home, but you must physically complete your task under the eyes of the teacher.
Wow.
Now I think this is where teachers now proactively try to break this terrible thing, which I also saw, that it is actually the parents competing for marks and not the children competing for marks.
So true. The parents competing for marks, because ultimately you get the odd case where the brother and the sister comes from the same household, the brother, say, 14 months older or a year older, and then the sister, in the next year, submitting exactly the same work, and they're competing, and sometimes there's a huge difference in what the brother gets and what the sister gets, and ultimately the teacher gets blamed and said, but it's acceptable to our teachers. Can we shift the blame? Can we say it is? And before you answer that, I just want to find out from our listeners. I'm talking to Dr. Gustav Gous. We're talking about ghostwriting, plagiarism, and the websites that sell sells their business online for money, of course. What do you say about it? You can WhatsApp us 082-657-2729. Where do we draw the line? Who's to blame? Can we stop this? This is not just a growing trend at school for our learners. It happens at university. And what do you say? Do you agree with this? Do you think it's ethically, morally wrong? What do you say about this? Right, blame shifting. Can we blame the teachers for this, Gustav?
As far as ethics is concerned, you must always take final responsibility, even though the system allows a good parent will, understand the spirit of the law and say, listen, if I do it for my child, then the child will need me for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
My child must go through a learning curve to go through all of this. But there are So the system can lend it to it. But I love the creative ways in which in some schools solve this. Because they've seen the system that people have this ability to source a good let's call it a good speech, but in the world of orators, the whole thing that is tested is not the development of intellectual property. It is, can you speak well? So one school had a system that said, listen, you're welcome to buy your good thing, or your parents can write your speech for you, but they have a standard speech which they wrote for the children who doesn't access to that. So you can decide, am I going to take the school speech or an outside speech? Because the thing that they're testing is not speech writing, it is speaking.
Yeah.
Right. And that was a nice creative way of doing it. I have no qualms that if people have say, listen, I can write. If they teach your orator skills and you need a base speech, then a student can make some extra pocket money and say, listen, let's do some speech writing for you. But in order to have fairness in the field, what about the children who doesn't have access to this, who doesn't have parents who are good and they're perhaps good engineers but not good in making speeches? Then the school provides a speech which they can use.
How do we stop this? How do we put a stop to this? Because clearly we live in the last days. Morals, ethics, values doesn't count that much as it used to way back then. Toe het ek afgeskryf as ek uitgevang was, was het 'n klat op my naam, 'n klat op almal se naam gewees. Nowadays, that doesn't seem to be the problem anymore. Is it possible to stop this at all?
I think we must just be more rigorous with as far as things are concerned. Fortunately, in the academic world, it becomes much more easier if you go through higher degrees post-school. There are computer programs that can actually compare. If you publish something, they can see there's something else in the world which is word for word. So they can give you a percentage of what is your original work and what is not. So that must be rigorously policed, and people must not get degrees for work that they've not done. Obviously, in the school system, it is more difficult because things are not published on the internet. I think there needs to be three focus points to solve this. There must be some sort of self-respect in the student itself that say, listen, what victory do I have if I did something, got good marks, and I didn't do it myself? But some children don't have that ethics. Therefore, the parents must say, listen, I must collaborate in my child's education, but I must not do it for him. One, a very good schoolmaster, which we knew, said that this specific project is parent-child collaboration, not to the parent doing it for the child, because the child doesn't have the maturity, which is actually good because you're not outsourcing your teaching totally to the school, but you involve the parents. And then old schooling was, Jesus was a carpenter. Why? Because his father was a carpenter. He learned it from his father. So that parent-child collaboration, but then the parents must police their own fine line and not accuse the school that they said, let's say, you make it possible for me to do it 100%. And then the school system must have a rigorous ethics policy as well, because as a professional in your field, you must have an ethics policy that you say, listen, if I can clearly see this work was not done by a grade 9 or a grade 12 or a grade 11, but this is post-grad quality, yeah, then there must be a system to catch that out.
Right. Speaking to Dr. Gustav Gus, just had somebody that says, my brother can't agree with you more. I believe this is wrong. But what if your child says to you at 7:45 that night, Mom, Dad, my project has to be in tomorrow. Ish. You as a mum or a dad, jump in and do what needs to be done. What do you say to parents like that?
Well, obviously, this is the recurring theme of my life as well. Yeah. Actually, my wife's life. But that is also where you, as a parent, do you teach consequence? Because the bad parenting is that you do not teach causality. That if you do not do your work, sometimes if you forget your lunch, then the parent must not take the lunch or the packed meal. Then they must go hungry for one day. If you made it and they forgot it, then there must be some causality. So one day you must send in your child and say, listen, face the music and get the low marks. But parenting is sometimes too soft. I think this is what we must learn from some Christian educational institutions where they talk about tough love. So that is important. But remember, you must never take away parent-child collaboration. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
But the parent doing it for the child, there's a fine line. And that is, you know, ethically in your mind, listen, I am now breaching this line.
All right. So not only do we find it at learning level, we'll find it at university level as well. If you've got 1,000 students in your class or 800 students, it's impossible to go through their work with a fine-tooth comb. It is just virtually impossible. Question is, do this happen in adult world as well, in companies out there where somebody come up with a brilliant idea, everybody buries it, a year later you dig it up and you present it as your own? Does this finally run through to your adult life as well if it's not addressed at an early stage?
If it's not addressed here, then it obviously, because there are numerous examples of this. The one is that it's all about intellectual property. It is about ideas. And people steal your ideas. I've had some of my IP being stolen. My consolation is they can steal my idea once, but they don't have my head, which is the originator of this idea.
Yeah.
So, but that must be, people must be sued, and they must be rightly so sued for this. I think what happens is that bosses, there's a junior person, and there's some court cases there that you came up with a new system saving money for the company, and the boss takes the credit for that. That's not only terrible leadership, that is also plain basic theft.
Yeah.
Then there are two things. Another thing, there's also how do you represent yourself? How many fake PhDs are not in circulation, that people actually get a fake PhD? In the professional speaking world, we came up with a very respected speaker who actually, they get a PhD. So universities, the system is also bad because, say, for instance, there's a University of Reading,
yeah,
and a respected university in the UK, and then there's a university in America with the same name, but you can actually buy degrees. You can go into that and say a PhD, they will give recognition to prior learning, so-called, but they give you a PhD for $1,000 and a master's degree for $700.
Wow.
So those things you get, and when the employer gets this thing, they say this person's got a PhD, they don't verify it. So I even have people now in placing agencies that they offer a person, they say, we verify the degree before we accept a person on all of this.
Gustav.
So if misrepresentation, it is, if it's not nipped in the bud at the school system, it will happen more out there.
My apologies for interrupting you there. Time's catching up with us. In closing, 400,000 people listening to you now. Somebody with fake accreditation, fake PhD, parents doing the homework for their kids, the learners, university studios, those who know farewell that they're not honest in what they're presenting as their own intellectual property. In closing, your final words to them, because ultimately, I'm not even sure if the Bible talks about this, you know, but we have to address this. In closing, your words to those who's willing to listen.
My only message is come clean on this, because there's no honor in it. Even if people don't catch you out, there's no honor in it. Your self-respect will go down because you know you're actually a fake. So don't do it. Don't put it out there, because you will harm your own self-image. There will be this inner voice that will be your punishment, even if it is not the law. But if you go and not only talk about the letter of the law, talk about the spirit of the law. Say, listen, the real source of wisdom is to say, I know that I don't know, and that you become known as a learner and not as a fake person that acts if you know something that you don't.
Yeah.
So come clean on this. Come clean before God. Become clean before the system. And as parents, do parent-child collaboration. But please, teach them responsibility. Otherwise, they will, for the rest of their lives, will like to take shortcuts, and you're actually bringing into the world a crook which is going to be caught out later in life.
Yeah, I love the way you refer to it. Shortcut crooks. Thank you. We need to talk more on this. We're going to do a Brandpunt on this as well. Dr. Gustav Goos, thank you. God bless you. Thank you for sharing your heart this morning.
100%. All the best.